Welcome to the House Judiciary Committee. Our purpose this afternoon is going to be to have a meet and greet with Commissioner Designee Joe Masters, who we're delighted to welcome to Juneau and before the committee. Our intention today was to have a joint hearing with Senate Judiciary. However, many of our colleagues are circling in Yakutat, Ketchikan, Seattle, elsewhere. So the House Judiciary Committee is going to have the honor today, Commissioner Masters. Let me first introduce Jane Pearson, who's going to be our committee aide, and I couldn't do the job without her, so I thank you, Jane, for all of your work in advance, and also Susan Rael. Am I saying that correctly? Is it Rael?
Yes, sir.
Who was with us for the last couple of years. In attendance in our committee today is our only new person, who we're delighted to welcome, Representative Gatto, who is going to bring some extraordinary thoughtfulness to this committee. So we welcome you, Representative Gatto. And then returning from the committee is Representative Holmes, the Vice Chair, Representative Dahlstrom, myself, Representative Rammers chairing again, and the Rules Chairman, Representative Coghill, and our good friend with the perhaps one of the most interesting bills that will come before the committee this year, House Bill 6, I believe.
I'm writing the script as we speak.
Yeah, so is the legislative skits. Representative Lynn, and then late as usual to our hearing room today is Representative Gruenberg. We're going to try and this year practice the same habits that have been set by Speaker Chenault, which is to convene our meetings on time. So members, please be advised. So with that, are there any opening comments from any members this afternoon?
Pleasure to be back.
Well said. Well said. So with that, Commissioner Designee, is it appropriate to Commissioner, is it appropriate Commissioner Designee or Commissioner Masters?
Commissioner Designee.
Commissioner Designee, right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We're delighted to see you. And as I said when I had the is Sue Stancliffe with you here?
She's on that airplane.
She's on that plane.
Are they having lunch at the Space Needle?
Yeah, they're having pie. And, yes, well, they're having pie and Sitka. So as I shared with Commissioner Designee Masters when we met a few days ago, it's a little bit like Roland Burris becoming an esteemed member of the United States Senate. It really doesn't matter how he got there. He seems to be a very qualified, competent, affable person, and the same can be said of you. We're honored to have you here before us, Commissioner, and the drama that led to you offering your public service to the state of Alaska is not an issue for this committee, and we think that you're going to bring great empathy and great intellect and great integrity to the office, and we are happy to have you. And I will also, for the benefit of the committee, let you know that John Glass is with us. Most of the committee members know Deputy Commissioner Glass, as well as in the room here with Commissioner Designee Masters are Con Holloway, David Shade, and Dim Oren. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the colonel of the state troopers is online. Should be online. Oren Dim is the director of the crime lab.
Oh, Colonel he Holloway, Audie Holloway. That's all right. Right, right. It says Con Holloway, and I didn't know who that was.
And sir, in the room with me also is Dan Spencer, director of admin services. We have Terry Rayback, director of Alaska Police Standards Council. Chris Ashenbrenner, director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assaults.
The floor is yours, and if you'll just pull the microphone a little bit closer to you for our audio people, it's a pleasure to have you before us, Commissioner Designee.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Chairman, and members. Before I get started, I did bring a presentation that is in front of you in PowerPoint format, although we're not presenting it in PowerPoint. Before I get started with that, I have had the pleasure of meeting most of you. For those of you that have not had time yet, I certainly will make time. And I just want to give a real brief account of my background for those that don't know my background, so they have the opportunity to understand how that interplays with my comments as I go through. I started my law enforcement career 26 years ago in rural Alaska, actually at the city of Unalaska. For several years, I've worked between there and in the village of Unalakleet in capacities as a village officer, a village public safety officer, and a municipal police officer. And that was before joining the state troopers, and I spent 20 years with the state troopers before retiring about 3 years ago. And in that capacity, I had worked a number of different assignments, including most of which are, you could classify as rural Alaska. I've also had time at the Public Safety Training Academy in recruitment, also in wildlife protection, and then worked in the director's office prior to my retiring. Following my retirement, I went to work for Doyon Universal Services, managing security contracts for critical infrastructure in this state and outside the state.
And Commissioner, when did your tenure with the state end?
It ended in 2005.
And what position were you in? What rank were you?
I was the deputy director for the Alaska State Troopers, rank of major.
And so, if we were to look at an org chart with the commissioner and then the deputy commissioner, where would a deputy director fall? We don't have an org chart.
Under the commissioner, you would have the director of the Alaska State Troopers, which is the colonel, and under that colonel, you would have two majors, and one of those majors would have been the position I held.
And how many people were you responsible for in that capacity?
I was I was in charge of field services, which was primarily most of the uniform division of the troopers.
We've been joined by Representative Gruenberg, and we also have cookies somewhere in the room, as is our custom here, to bake before Judiciary Committee, because I am in hospitality. And we also have been joined by Senator McGuire, who is online. We're delighted to have you with us, Senator McGuire.
Would you ask him?
Thank you. Thank you.
What community are you in, Senator McGuire? Go ahead.
One of the main things I wanted to bring today is a preview of how I view bringing the department forward over this next fiscal year and through the remainder of the current fiscal year. And I did that in a format that I prepared that gave somewhat of an overview of the department as it sits today and some of the main issues and conditions experienced through 2008, and then added some of the things we're going to be focusing on through 2009, which would actually be fiscal year 2010. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through the details on each of these slide pages because most of you are already currently aware of how the department is situated and the divisions and so on and so forth and the responsibilities of those. But they are good to have on those pages because they do serve as a reminder as we go through the different pages as what the department is actually responsible for. The Department of Public Safety currently has five divisions: the Division of Admin Services, Statewide Services, Fire and Life Safety, Alaska State Troopers, and Alaska Wildlife Troopers. We also are responsible for four boards and councils, which are the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, the Alaska Police Standards Council, and the Alaska Fire Standards Council. Moving into a discussion on the Alaska State Troopers, and as I start on this page, on the left-hand column, or the left-hand side of the page, is outlined the structure and makeup of the department, and you'll notice at the top of the page the basic mission is also listed, and I'm not going to go through those for each of these pages, but I'm going to concentrate primarily on the bulleted items that are on the right-hand column as we discuss the different departments, or the different divisions, rather. In 2008, the Alaska State Troopers responded to 119,000 plus calls for service. About 10% of those annually, and this carries forward to previous years as well, result in criminal cases that are either referred for prosecution or actually result in, in prosecution and convictions. In 2008, the department was responsible for 13 homicide investigations occurring within its jurisdiction, of which 100% of those 13 homicides were investigated and closed as solved.
And Commissioner, what percentage of those homicides were DV-related?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a good number for you. I could, if you want, I can get those numbers for you in detail later on. I don't have an off the...
Chairman?
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just going back, you said 119,217 calls, but you used the words responded to. Did they respond to that number? Because there must be many calls that you just didn't respond to because of lack of manpower.
When we log 119,217 calls as listed here, those are items that are logged as a response from the troopers of some kind. And they're not necessarily all criminal type acts that are responded to. They could be civil standbys. Some of them could be prisoner transportations by units outside of the judicial services unit. They could be motorist assists, things of that nature.
And if I may, just to continue, there must be a percent that you just don't go to. I'm curious to know if, there's 10% of the calls that have to do with somebody laid some trash in my yard. I found a gum wrapper, I don't know, that you can't respond to. And that's what I'm after. I'm just curious to see how many calls for service are actually serviced, if you know that.
Through the chair, yes, that is correct, that there are certainly calls that come into state trooper units that are not responded to because we don't have the resources to respond to them. These here, I would venture to say, are all things that we did respond to. In certain very specific areas, we may track some that we don't respond to. In most areas outside the main urban areas, we virtually respond to all of them.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let the record show we've been joined by our good friend, Senator Terrio. Senator Terrio, there's some fresh baked cookies behind you if you're interested.
Thank you.
Welcome. Commissioner, just on my mind, and then Representative Gruenberg has a question. I came to enjoy very much the input and help from Lieutenant Rodney Dial. Is he going to be with us as the liaison for the troopers this year? He's a terrific asset.
Mr. Chairman, yes, he is.
Oh, good. Excellent. Just kudos from this committee for how helpful and available he was and talking about a milk-drinking poster child for the state troopers. He was a number one. He was a remarkable asset for your department.
Thank you.
Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, do these 119,000 include things like service of writs of attachment and things like that, civil service?
They do if they're outside of the scope of the judicial services unit. So if a trooper serves a writ, then they will generally...
Because don't you maintain the judicial services unit, too?
Yes, we do.
But this is not included in there?
I'd have to double-check. I don't believe it is.
How about VPSO calls?
This would include VPSO calls.
You said that you responded about 100% of the time. I'm aware of some cases where it's been hours, if not days, before those are responded to in villages where they don't have a village public safety officer. Are you going to get into the time lapse and stuff in your presentation?
I was not planning on getting into some of the time lags, but you are correct. And there are certainly a lot of logistical issues and problems with dealing with calls for service in rural areas, and sometimes they do take up to several days to respond to.
I mean, I think everybody on this committee has been here and has heard this presentation except Representative Gatto, and we know what a great job you have, but I think from a legislative point of view, I'd be more interested in hearing the problems you're having and whether or not you're able to solve them and why you can't, if you can't, and what we can do to help. So I hope you would focus on some of those, because those are the areas where the rubber meets the road, to coin a phrase. And those are the issues we should be concerned about. And I'm particularly interested in the lack of service in a number of villages and how you've been hurt by budget cuts and anything like that. So that's a request, at least from this representative.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if you'd prefer that type of a format, we can certainly, I can certainly deviate.
I'd like to know, because we've all been through this, most of us, a number of times, I'd like to know what the problems are that the department's having, what they're doing, and what they can't do and haven't been able to do, so we can see what we need to look at as a legislature.
I'm comfortable with proceeding that way. We all have enjoyed pretty much an overview, and so perhaps what we could do, Representative Gruenberg, this is a short PowerPoint presentation. It's only 9 or 10 pages, and perhaps, Commissioner, we could go through this rapidly in an overview capacity, although we have plenty of time. The clock is not our enemy today, and then I would encourage members to make notes, and we can go back and revisit that for, you know, some original content and a sense of a direction from the commissioner and some of the folks that are with him today. Does that seem like a good plan to you?
That's fine, as long as we can reach them, the issues.
Agreed. All right, so with that, Commissioner.
Okay, thank you. The homicides in 2008 were 1,300% were solved. We're also assisting other agencies within the state with their with theirs as well. We have 6 more homicide investigations that are currently ongoing of where we're assisting these other departments. Currently, our cold case unit has 72 open cases. There's 4 investigators that are working those cases. We've to date closed 29. 11 of those have been by arrest. And we're continuing progress as we speak on a number more. Our abate unit has experienced certainly busy work within the realm of drug and alcohol investigations. Generally, it appears that marijuana grow operations and meth labs are declining. However, that doesn't necessarily mean there's not a marijuana and meth problem. What we have seen is it appears that there's an increase in heroin cases, OxyContin, and other prescription medication abuses, and also we're experiencing, at least with our cases, an increase of drug importations.
Thank you. And Commissioner, this is one of the areas that I would like to come back to when we conclude your presentation. Senator Lyda Green and I, when she was here, we went round and round about diminishing the amount of meth labs, and she said, well, it's just going to come back into the state as ICE. I think that was the trade name for it at the time, through FedEx and UPS and be muled in other ways. And, of course, I was happier with that because it's easier to mitigate a house that has a finished product than to mitigate a house, you know, that's an active meth lab that's got all this garbage crap that's ruining a neighborhood. And so I'd like to come back to the issue of interdiction of finished product and also to have a discussion about what we're doing with muling alcohol and drugs into rural Alaska and then medevacking people back out of rural Alaska. So that's an issue that I'm going to note and have us come back to after your presentation.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The street value of narcotics and other illegal drugs that have been seized by the Abate Unit, which is the Alaska Bureau of Alcohol, Drugs, and Drug Enforcement, was $19 million in 2008. It was slightly higher than that in 2007, but the street value is $19 million. Alcohol importation arrests have increased in 2008 to 291, which is about a 30% increase over the previous year.
And I'll ask you to make a notation on what the source that is, whether it is more enforcement, if it is some of the statutes that we passed here last year, or what is the where is that coming from? Please continue, Commissioner.
Okay. Sexual assault, sexual abuse of minor cases continues to be a problem in all areas of Alaska, particularly in the Bethel region. And troopers responded to 337 sexual assaults and 375 sexual abuse of a minor cases last year. Although that is a reduction over the previous years, it still is a considerable issue.
And does anybody in your department have a sense of what what percentage that is of the overall problem. Is that 10% that are being reported? Do we have a sense of how large the universe of problems are?
Mr. Chairman, online, I've got Colonel Holloway, which he may be able to speak to some of that, as well as Director of CDVSA.
This is Colonel Holloway. I can only, I would have to guess, because it's very difficult to determine, you know, how many we don't know about. So if I did, if I made any kind of, come up with any kind of a number, it would have to be a guess. Certainly, I don't believe that we are capturing all of the sexual assaults and sexual abuse of minors cases. And I would be very reticent to offer just some kind of guess without having a little bit more to base it on.
Yes, well, I will tell the committee that Susan Parks, when she was in the capacity of Deputy Attorney General, she said that it was 100, that for every child abuser that we got, there were 100 instances of children being abused, but that the same child might be abused multiple times. So that is something that is of interest to the committee, and under your stewardship, if there are more tools that you need in your tool bag to fight fight this epidemic, the committee is very interested in helping to initiate legislation that would assist the department in better fighting this scourge.
Thank you. Safety in the courtrooms and transportation of prisoners is increasing in the state as well. This year, over 67,000 prisoners were required for transportation, which primarily was handled by the Bureau of Judicial Services and state troopers. One of the challenges we've had in particularly some rural areas is that troopers needed to be assigned to do those transportations because court service officers were not available to do that. One of the things we'd recently done, which is going to help this, is we've reallocated positions to create 7 new CSO positions and targeted those into rural areas where troopers are doing that work. And what that has allowed us to do is within a very short period of time, we'll have those CSOs working, and though the troopers that are doing that work will be freed to concentrate on other more important activities that are in their direct responsibility. The department responded to 740 search and rescues, 289 saves. We continued to work on traffic safety and initiatives that will reduce the number of traffic deaths on Alaska's highways and off Alaska's highways. In 2008, there were 62 highway fatalities in this state. 19 of those were alcohol related. Those 19, that is a reduction over previous years, and I believe this is several years in a row now that we've had those reductions. But 62 highway fatalities is still a very significant number. There are currently 2 highway safety corridors that have been designated in Alaska. There are, I believe, 4 more, 3 or 4 more that have been designated as areas that DOT would like to designate as highway safety corridors. One of the issues that is preventing them from doing that or making them more reluctant is the lack of dedicated enforcement efforts in order to make those effective. Quite frankly, they're not effective without the enforcement component.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you. When we use the word alcohol related, is that any measure, any level of alcohol, or only 0.08 and above and causal? Or, I guess I see it's about a third, but we consistently hear it's well over half. And so because this disagrees with the thought that it's closer to most, I just want to know what we use to define alcohol related.
Through the chairman, that indicates that the accident that had the fatality, that somebody associated with that accident, either the driver of the vehicle that was involved, the individual that was mm-hmm. the subject of the fatality or the victim, or the driver of another vehicle that was involved in the collision was, there was some measurable amount of alcohol. It doesn't necessarily mean that they were all under the legal, or that one of the drivers was under the legal limit, or over the legal limit, rather, and
okay,
and
that's DUI. What I was after. Thank you.
One of the, obviously, the significant and well-publicized challenges for the Department of Public Safety over the past several years has been vacancies, and our ability to provide a good service is tied to those vacancies, and our ability to understand what service we're capable of providing or what our future needs are tied to our ability to fill those positions as well. Currently, within the Division of Alaska State Troopers, there's 22 vacancies in trooper positions. In the Alaska Wildlife Trooper Division, which you'll see here in a little bit, there's 5 positions that are vacant. And that, for the AST, that's of 301 authorized trooper positions. The next academy that we have that we're recruiting for now, it starts near the end of February. Recruitment has been a top priority over this past year, and has been an extreme priority of mine since I started in October or late September. And although we're at the very end of our recruitment and appointment cycle for this academy, as a matter of fact, the final files are being reviewed by the colonels as we speak to determine who they're going to offer jobs to go to this academy. It appears that with our recruitment cycle for the academy and our pool of applicants for lateral transfer that are already certified officers from other agencies or department, both in state and out of state, that we are very hopeful that as we go into FY 2010 that we will have all of our vacancies filled. We also have 12 vacancies in our CSO ranks. Those are currently out on Workplace Alaska and being advertised and hired at this point.
What does CSO
stand for? Court Service Officers within the Bureau of Judicial Services, of which 7 are those positions that I mentioned a few minutes ago. And those positions will also be filled within the next couple of months. So all told, we believe that we are going to be able to fill about 37 positions by July.
This is another area that I'd like to come back to, Commissioner, and understand why you're having so much more success at this than your predecessor did, since that was such so newsworthy.
The VPSO program continues to be a major priority of the department to continue to help AST deliver rural law enforcement services and rural safety services in general. That program, similar to DPS, has had some recruitment challenges in the past and also was subject to very high turnover rates. As some of you already know, in July, we instituted a pay raise within the VPSO program from $17 to $21 an hour, and that's the base pay rate. After 6 months, those employees go up to an amount more than that, $22.30, $22.50 range, and then are subject to increases annually after that. So far, And I think it may be a little bit too premature to say that this is a trend, but so far it looks like that has helped in recruitment and retention of VPSOs. Our most recent academy, which is in session now, we were able to put 19 applicants or 19 recruits into that VPSO academy, of which unfortunately only 12 remain today after we're about halfway through that academy now. The turnover rate at the academy, that's fairly standard, but the fact is we do have 12 remaining in that academy. That's one of the highest numbers that we've had in a number of years. Also, the turnover rate for existing well-established or partially established VPSOs that have been on for a little while seems to be slowing down as well. So like I said, it may be premature to say that it's having a very good, solid effect on that, but it certainly appears to be so. We're continuing to apply for and administer federal grants that are in support of both the VPSO program as well as the village police officers in rural Alaska, primarily in the areas of equipment, supplies, and training. We're continuing our effort for trooper support as well. Some of the issues that affect turnover in the VPSO program, one certainly is pay, another one is community support, and a third one is trooper support as well. So we're trying to beef up our trooper support so we, you know, not now that we've possibly have fixed the pay problem, now let's fix the support problem on both those realms. The number of visits that troopers spent in VPSO communities last year was 2,340. With these 12 positions that are going to be coming out of the academy, we will have 51 positions in the VPSO ranks filled. Funding currently, as we see it going into FY10, for general funds would allow 60 total positions. In the past, we'd also funded positions through some federal grants as well. We did experience over the past year, after some additional training to VPSOs in the area of domestic violence and DUI, an increase in the number of cases that they actually were able to work, which is significant because if they didn't work those would be cases that were worked by troopers. And the numbers for 2008 were 238 DV and assault arrests. That was up 51% from the previous year. 57 DUI arrests, and that was up 63% from the previous years. We are continuing in that program as well with a RSA between public safety and the Department of Corrections to administer probation and parole services as well, and this allows DOC to release people out of their system and back into the communities, and through the VPSO program we're able to monitor the probation and parole area as well. Those funds we're able to augment VPSO salaries as well. One other area we've been increasing our efforts is drug abuse resistance education, which is the DARE training, and we're bringing in more VPSOs to get that program out into rural Alaska. That took a special waiver of some of the program requirements on the behalf of the DARE group because of the type. The VPSOs aren't able to administer that program as it was designed for from DARE, and they were receptive to doing that. And we currently have about 20 VPSOs trained in the DARE program.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Terrio.
Thank you. I appreciate being able to sit in today. The contracts, the VPSO contracts, I'm just trying to remember back to a budget subcommittee a number of years ago. What is the mechanism that the contracts is issued to the individuals, and is there a flat percentage of the contract that is allowed for administering the administrative oversight?
The contracts are given in a budget line item to the Department of Public Safety, and then that is then administered to the nonprofit corporations, of which we have 10. And Dan Spencer's here. He might be able to answer whether there's a flat rate on the administrative fees.
If you'll introduce yourself for the record, just pull the microphone close to you.
Chairman Dan Spencer, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chairman, Senator Terrio, each of the contracts, which each of these nonprofits has an overhead rate, I believe is what you're referring to. And that overhead rate typically is the federally recognized indirect rate for that particular nonprofit. So it can vary from nonprofit to nonprofit. But they use the overhead rate that they've got with their other federal grants. It's typically what they do.
Can you give us an idea? I forget what the range of, say, $100,000 or what percentage might then be utilized by administration.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Turio, you know, I haven't looked at that question lately, so I would be happy to get back to you with that information. It was in the past, as you may recall from your committee meetings, subcommittee meetings, as high as 30%, and it was part of the big effort was to get that down.
Thank you. And Commissioner, just one other. So I understand you're currently getting close to, you think you will fill all the VPSO positions?
Through the chair, if all of 12 of these positions or VPSOs graduate the academy and stay, which right now all indications are that they will, that will bring the number to 51. So we will still have room for hiring and training 9 more within the budget that's requested.
But the recruitment efforts look, they're bearing more fruit. I mean, people are applying with the increase in pay.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And we're receiving more applications. We're processing more application requests and doing more backgrounds on applicants.
So, Commissioner, are you at 39 out of 60 then?
Right now we're at 51 that are hired and working. 12 of those 51 are in the academy. The VPSO program is a little bit different than the trooper program in that once a VPSO is hired, we put them to work pretty much right away and oversight them. And then when the academy, which occurs primarily once a year, comes around, then we train them to a better extent.
What's the annual turnover rate there historically? 10%, 20%?
You know, at one time it was upwards of 30%.
Could we see a list of that for the benefit of the committee? Not now, obviously, but for the last 5 years, what the annual turnover rate has been for the VPSO program as well as for the state troopers? Because that's been an ongoing issue for the 25th legislature, which is what why we're having so much difficulty filling state trooper slots. And so, pardon me for being a little bit suspect that suddenly we're able to remedy a problem that has been chronic with the department. And just trying to separate truth from propaganda.
And could we also have the, for each of those years, Commissioner, the completion rate at the academy each of the sessions?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Representative Holmes?
Nothing. Mr. Chairman, you asked my question.
Okay.
And to clarify, is that for both the VPSO Academy and the Trooper Academy?
Yes, sir.
The Division of Wildlife Troopers, we'll move on to them. The 2008 resource user contacts for that division was just under 59,000, which is up from the previous year. And the violation rate, which is 8.5%, which is down from the previous year. So that's actually a positive indication, and I think if the numbers can continue that way, that would be an indication that the more contacts that we have with resource users, the better effect that has on the rate that people are willing to violate. One of the efforts over the last couple of years that AWT has undertaken is recreational boater safety. The recreational boater deaths over the past several years has been continually declining. I think that can be attributed to a multifaceted effort, not just because wildlife troopers are making contacts, but also the Coast Guard and the program through the Department of Natural Resources as well, through other efforts like Kids Don't Float and the PFD usage. Number of deaths in 2007 was 17, and then the number in 2008 was 12. We would hope that numbers in 2009 would indicate that we have more contacts with recreational boater usage, and then the numbers would continue to decline. I'd already mentioned that currently there are 5 vacancies within the trooper ranks, AWT. We continue cooperative relationships between the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, National Marine Fisheries Service. In particular, we have an ongoing joint enforcement agreement with the National Marine Fisheries Service that has been very beneficial to the state and has allowed us to continue patrols for fisheries that we may not have been able to do patrols of had we not had that agreement in place.
Representative Drummer.
Commissioner, your agreements are with the federal government, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the National Marine Fisheries Service. What's JEA?
JEA stands for Joint Enforcement Agreement, and that actually is with the National Marine Fisheries Service.
Do you have any agreements with the Coast Guard, or do these agencies work with the Coast Guard? I mean, what is the enforcement they do as opposed to what the Coast Guard does?
I'm not sure of the distinction between the Coast Guard and what National Marine Fisheries Service does. The distinction between the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Coast Guard and the state is we concentrate on state violations, and they concentrate on federal violations. In areas where we have dual fisheries, where they're federal and state fisheries, we're able to take care of state violations and alert them to federal violations that may be occurring at the same time.
The reason I'm asking is because I was told something that I thought was fairly chilling, and that was that the, and I've talked to some of you about this, that the Coast Guard informs me that they don't have enough fuel in their capacity in their vessels to remain on station out in the Bering Sea and up in the Northwest Passage area. When I was in the Navy, we had enough fuel to go around the world once and plus. But these ships don't. What enforcement is there up there from what you know, Commissioner, and including what the state does?
You know, I am not privy to the Coast Guard's patrol plans, obviously, so I don't know the number of days that they're able to stay on scene. Our patrol vessels primarily, we have a number of vessel sea days which we're able to do patrols into the Bering Sea and out to the Western Aleutians, and those are primarily for fisheries patrol. They're not to be on station for search and rescue purposes, although we would divert for search and rescue if one occurred within our reach.
Thank you. Do they stay on station, or do they come back in? What, how much fuel do they have capacity to stay out there with? Through the chair.
The state vessels?
Yeah.
Generally have the capacity to operate for several weeks.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. Continue, please.
One of the focuses this year is going to be on continuing wild stock protection as opposed to hatchery fish protection, an area that's growing of not necessarily concern, but certainly one that has to be dealt with within the Wildlife Division is computer forensics and the use of computers by guides and others for the commission of their crime. We do have one person that is now dedicated to assisting with wildlife-related computer forensics that will allow us to get into computers to take a look for evidence of criminal activity that's in those computers. Training efforts are continuing. One challenge that wildlife troopers continue to have is their relative experience level. The relative experience level for their officers is fairly low, and some of that can be accommodated through training, and others certainly needs to be accommodated through experience. They are looking at ways to possibly attract or take a fresh look at attracting applicants directly into their ranks that already have experience, as they had done in the distant past, I guess. Fire and life safety, most commonly known as the Office of the Fire Marshal. Fire deaths in 2007 or 24, 19, and 2008, certainly one concern, and I don't believe my state fire marshal, Dave Tyler, was able to get online here because I think he's on that same airplane going well. So I if there are questions related to some of the activities regarding fire deaths or what the state may be doing, we may have to defer some of those to a later time. In 2008, they did 1,543 inspections with a compliance rate at 35%, which was an increase. The number of inspections is dramatically higher than the previous years, as well as plan reviews. There are currently 11 deferred jurisdictions, and those are jurisdictions such as the municipality of Anchorage or boroughs of Kenai or Fairbanks North Star that have the ability to do inspections and plan reviews under direction and oversight of the state fire marshal's office. We recently instituted an audit program for those deferred jurisdictions and have them on a cycle of audit for every 2 years. They're continuing an online plan review process, which should help in speeding up the process of plan reviews. Also, they this year are going to be having a second annual fire and building officials forum, which is a forum that allows building officials and fire officials from various organizations and entities to get together with the fire marshal's office to discuss common issues and solutions. Also in 2008, we unveiled Raven Island, which is a interactive computerized fire safety game that allows kids to get online and play these interactive games that have safety and fire messages. And finally, in this area, I wanted to highlight the Office of Oil and Gas Systems and Facilities. Currently, we have a plan reviewer and inspector in the Joint Pipeline Office, primarily concentrating on the Alyeska Pipeline. We're expanding that office to do plan reviews and inspections for all state pipelines, and this office and one increased person, an inspector, would staff that office up, and also it positions us well for the eventual building of a natural gas pipeline if that gets done. In statewide services, APSIN, which you are very familiar with, I'm sure, is in its final development stage this coming year. The unit is also concentrating on information technology development for use by the wildlife troopers and by Alaska State Troopers, primarily in the area of continuing the deployment of the mobile data terminals, continued development deployment of in-car video, a records management system, tying that records management system into another statewide system with other law enforcement agencies through a system called ALIAS, which is the Alaska Law Enforcement Information Sharing System. As far as challenges go, that unit is going to be challenged with certain migration to these new technologies and with digital network storage, because a lot of these technologies are extremely intensive in the requirement for the amount and size of data storage. So that's a challenge that we're working through this year. Sex offender registration currently is 2,458 registered sex offenders online. 107 are non-compliant, which is about a little over 5%.
Representative Lynn?
What penalty is there for someone who doesn't keep their sex registry offender thing up to date? I had somebody in my neighborhood moved in. I found a sex offender. Did a couple of efforts to get this person properly registered. To my knowledge, nothing really happened as a result of that. What's the penalty and so on?
Well, through the chair, it is a misdemeanor to not register timely when you're supposed to. It has been a challenge to track and follow up on these with the other workload that
what kind of a misdemeanor is it? A, B, C, what?
You know,
good question for the Department of Law.
Okay. Thank you.
But it is one of the misdemeanors.
That's correct. Concealed handgun permits are 7802 for the numbers there. Fingerprint cards continue to be processed by AFIS, which is the Automated Fingerprint Identification System section. Last year, they received over 60,000 for processing. About 26,000, just over 26,000 for criminal, and the rest are for applicant cards and background clearances for school teachers and such.
Representative Lynn?
I just want to ask on the sex offender registration again. It's a challenge. What is the main difficulty? Just other priorities, or not enough officers to do this, or is there one person assigned to this, or just catch as catch can?
Specifics on challenges with this, I could defer those questions back to Colonel Holloway, who's online.
Well, are we talking about a 4%? We're talking about a 96% success rate and a 4% failure rate. Is that right? Is that what you're asking about, Representative Lynn?
Well, you said it's a challenge, to keep it up to date. Okay. And I guess it was, why the challenge as compared to other things? Because just it's the higher priorities. You only have a certain number of people to work with and all these things to deal with.
Well, the compliance is by the sex offender. I mean, we've taken that up in this committee before. As sex offenders move around, they fail to re-register.
Right.
For new residents, I assume that's the.
Through the chair, that is correct, and the challenge is on trying to identify and track the non-compliant people is resources.
Thank you.
Moving on to. The next slide, under the Office of the Commissioner, we have various entities that aren't under the other divisions: Police Standards Council, Fire Standards Council, Council on Domestic Violence, Sexual Assault, the Beverage Control Board, and the Crime Lab. One of the things we're instituting as we speak is an office under the Office of the Commissioner called Office of Professional Standards, and this unit is specifically being stood up to deal with internal investigations and complaints and complaint follow-up and complaint tracking within the department, not just within AST, but also AWT or all units and all members of the department.
This is a new unit that will be available for all Alaskans?
It's available to all Alaskans in the sense that they can contact this unit if they do have issues with employees of the department.
And how would they be referred to the Office of Professional Standards? You would call and make a complaint, and you would be referred by the telephone operator to this new unit?
Right now we're researching the best method for the structure of the unit and how to deal with the complaints that come into it. But I can say that any complaint that comes into the Department of Public Safety is going to be routed to this unit, either by having that person given the ability to contact the unit directly, or if any citizen in the state contacts any office of the department and makes a complaint, then that information is also.
When you say new unit, you mean under your watch, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, we'd like to see some details on this in particular, because this is of a significant issue to the committee after what Alaska has gone through over the last 6 or 9 months. Representative Lynn?
And I understand the constraints, but what feedback is there to the complainant so they know that, one, you are investigating, and two, is anything, I know it's a confidential investigation, but is there anything at all that can make the complainant feel that something is, in fact, being done and certain milestones are being met? So they're just not, when they make a complaint and never hear anything more about it, period, unless it appears in the newspaper or something.
Yes, through the chair, that is correct. There are certainly limits on the information due to statute that dictate what is able to be talked about or not talked about regarding confidential personnel matters. Part of the unit's responsibility, though, will be to get back to complainants to to give them information on what is admissible. And part of their, this unit's responsibility initially when they stand up is to take a look at our policies and procedures and have a procedure for specifically that.
So they will know that, yes, this is being investigated, and it'll be resolved one way or another. We expect it in a month or two. We're having hearings on it and so on. They have some feedback.
Through the chair, I am a little hesitant to say exactly how that is going to play out or what the specifics of what can or can't be given to complaining persons.
Maybe, Commissioner, this is an overview. We'd be very interested to have you come back to us on this subject as you better flesh out this new unit. It's of concern to many of us, and we don't want to press the point now as you're into your new position, but the committee does have sustained interest in this new mechanism, and we applaud you for innovating, and it's needed, so we'll look forward to a follow-up on that at the appropriate time.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Police Standards Council was expanded by two members to incorporate line officers. Recently, at the most recent Police Standards Council meeting, there was a vote to accept VPSO training that would allow that training to be applied towards the satisfying of a basic police certificate. The training in itself does not constitute all of the requirements under statute to get that certificate, but the training that currently occurs with added training could reach that level, and those details are being worked now between Police Standards and the Academy and the Department. Training and certifications currently being offered to 6,100 career firefighters and volunteers. This is under the Alaska Fire Standards Council. CDVSA currently is funding 24 victim service programs across Alaska, which services about 8,000 victims. Also, we provided in 2008 77 different domestic violence, sexual assault related training sessions, primarily for law enforcement advocates, prosecutors, first responders, and court personnel. Those types of training are going to be a continued focus for FY 2010 as well. CDVSA also is focusing on strategic planning to boost domestic violence, sexual assault prevention activities, both at local and state levels. And then moving on to the ABC board, we just had a new director appointed, Ms. Shirley Gifford. Ms. Gifford is former police chief of Soldotna and also a longtime officer, retired from the Anchorage Police Department, and also a former board member on the ABC board as well.
And for the committee's benefit, I've asked the commissioner designee if I can meet Ms. Gifford in her new capacity as the director, taking a long-serving Doug Griffin's place. And we would like it if she would come before the committee as we regularly take up legislation that's particularly germane to rural Alaska. And we were just hearing, I think, from new ledge director Jerry Gallagher about a bill trying to limit the amount of alcohol into a damp area, and we're all well aware of those challenges. So when Ms. Gifford is scheduled to come to Juneau, we would appreciate notification so the committee can notice out, spending 30 minutes in an overview with her, and it would help us to do our job and to get some feedback from her, and let her have some feedback from the committee, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Currently, she is scheduled to come sometime in February, and we'll get those dates for you.
Perfect. Thank you.
And do that. Also, over the last several years, we've had a short-term, non-perm investigator working within the ABC board. And we've recently upgraded that to a permanent full-time position, so they'll have an additional investigator to work ABC issues.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kaka.
Just as he's flipping the page, I just wanted to make a note of thanks, and I hope that it continues on your flexibility on co-locating with the domestic on violence, sexual assault, and the child abuse cases. I think that's been a good model. I'd like to see that keep going.
Through the chair, yes. Cooperative efforts between our agency and our divisions and other agencies is paramount to success, and I firmly believe that and committed to that. Crime Detection Laboratory. Last year, there were 4,500 cases submitted to the lab for analysis. We were able to turn 78% of those within 30 days, which is a very good effort. There is currently a case backlog of about 600, which we've been able to reduce by 24% this past year. And we also were able to restore fire debris analysis or arson analysis as a service the lab can perform. These efforts have primarily been able to, we can call them successes now, through the efforts of the lab to fill their vacant positions. Prior to last year, they had 10 vacancies in the lab, and as of today, they are full. So they've had success in recruiting and getting qualified personnel for those positions. Now, there still is a challenge in training and certification of those employees, so there is still some spool-up time before they're all fully up to speed and fully capable. CODIS samples for DNA or DNA submissions and entries into CODIS. About 2 months ago, we had an 8,000 case backlog. We've reduced that to 6,000, and it looks like we're able to begin those catch-ups, running about 2,000 a month, and we think that we'll have that completely caught up by July. And that's primarily because of the new positions being filled. The lab accreditation was successfully renewed. Currently, the lab the state operates is one of the finest in the country, and it continues to be so, and I think that's something that not only I am proud of as a member of the department for as long as I've been, but now as a commissioner as well. I think it's something that all of Alaskans can be proud of. Certainly there is challenges with the lab that's currently in place. It was built in 1988. Not only structurally is it having issues with the ventilation system and roof and need of some significant repairs, but also space-wise, it is just quite frankly being outgrown. It originally was designed to accommodate 23 scientists. Currently we have 42, 40 of which are operating within that building now. We'll talk. We do have some work towards a new lab, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. DNA continues to be the fastest advancing forensic science within our law enforcement community, and that is a focus at the lab, a big focus of this lab. Some emerging trends in the lab and DNA is the increased use in property crimes. We have a 30% increase in solved property crimes as a result of DNA testing, and that will continue in future years as well. There's also new techniques being developed, which makes DNA testing much more reliable and much more detailed. And I think what I probably could do is have the lab director, since he's online, talk a little bit about this, because if I get into too much detail, I'll just start stumbling over myself. But suffice it to say that our lab is advancing forward in DNA and our DNA capabilities, and our lab needs certainly tie directly into the new DNA techniques. DNA is also being used more and more as these new techniques come online to revive cold cases, and also are being used to determine whether or not people may have been improperly convicted of crimes. With the chair's permission, I'd like to ask Orrin Dim, the lab director, to make a couple of comments on this slide page.
Sure. Zorn Dim, the forensic laboratory manager, representatives through the chair. Really what we're looking at is, again, with DNA being the fastest advancing forensic science that we currently have, we try very hard to stay up with techniques as they advance, as they move on. Things like YSTR, which is the ability to look at DNA specific to males, very useful in cases where you have samples present on a female. The female is present in greater amounts, making it difficult to see your male sample, and this sample is blind to the female, so that we're able to get these samples developed that you couldn't otherwise. Mitochondrial DNA, excellent for samples where you can't perform normal DNA analysis, where you have a hair maybe without a root. And low copy DNA, where we're looking at extraordinarily low counts of DNA, touch DNA. All these techniques just open up whole new worlds of cases where cases we have currently where we could not raise profiles, where they remain unsolved. The ability to go back and apply these techniques to those cases and potentially find answers. In the end, you know, we look at, as we move forward, if the lab becomes more efficient and can provide better answers, the whole state, all of law enforcement becomes more efficient at doing their jobs. And we are that clearinghouse for enabling them to close cases, whether it be by finding answers, especially with our database searches, exonerating those who are suspects, but the evidence determines them not to be suspects, so the investigations can move forward. We are building that infrastructure now, YSTR and mitochondrial. We're having databases created, population databases to go forward. Our existing facility simply will not accommodate low copy or mitochondrial DNA in it. So we are taking the steps to be able to do the science, but we do recognize our existing facility will not allow those sciences to occur.
Representative Holmes and then Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we currently processing all of our own samples here in Alaska, or are we sending any of them outside?
We are, Representative, through the chair, we are currently processing all our samples in-house. We did attempt to do some outsourcing last April. We did run into 13 instances of contamination from the vendor, resulting in us having to reanalyze 50% of the samples we had sent out. And this is something labs nationwide are dealing with, is outside vendors, and the standards to which they work aren't quite the same as what crime lab standards are. But we are extremely proud of our CODIS section. The three analysts we've hired are trained with the capacity to turn cases at almost 2,000 samples a month is actually a higher capacity than we were getting from our contract lab. And we're able to do it for less money than they were charging.
Thank you. This is an overview to learn about the commissioner, not about our DNA lab. So if we can keep the answers a little bit narrower in scope, I would appreciate it. Representative Gatto. Okay.
Actually, I may be violating that rule you just said, but we had a major fire at a church in Wasilla, and the feds got involved. When the feds get involved, do they usurp your authority, or do you support each other in an investigation?
What I can tell you, sir, is that evidence came to our laboratory for analysis and was analyzed and completed. 3% of our cases at the laboratory are federal. From federal agencies. In this case, I don't, I was under the understanding that jurisdiction on the case was still state level. The feds may have assisted at some point, but it is a state case and was for the state lab to process.
Thank you very much for your answer. Commissioner, does that conclude your presentation? Do you want to talk about the crime lab? With our broke state, your $100 million crime lab?
That's what I want to talk about.
The the crime lab, the proposed crime lab, as far as an update, first, the easier one I'll answer first, and that's the lease in the location. We're very near a agreement with the municipality of Anchorage regarding a land lease, and in that one, we've just about got knocked out. The second part, which is more to your point, Mr. Chairman, is the validation of the proposed crime lab and scope and design. And currently, we have the both the scope and the design out for basically a third-party review to determine whether or not the assumptions that we have made regarding where we think the needs are in the state and the type of services that will be required in the state and the size and design of the lab to meet those needs, whether those are correct. And we expect that validation review to be completed by the end of January and at some point available for the legislature to review.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can we go back to general questions for the Commissioner, Representative Coghill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to leave some of these for Department of Law, but there are resource questions that I'll probably ask on two things. Number one, going all the way back to the marijuana grow operations and meth on slide three, we've worked quite a bit here in this committee, and thanks to the chairman. It's kind of interesting to me that now the importation cases. So what's the interdiction load for your workforce?
Mr. Chairman, or through the chair, rather.
Okay.
You are correct that you know, some of the efforts that this legislature made in past years with legislation, particularly in the area of precursors for meth, development of methamphetamine, has probably, we think, very strongly reduced the numbers of the meth labs that are in the state. As a backfill to that, people are that still want the that still want meth are getting it from somewhere, and that's importation from outside sources. And the efforts that are made to interdict methamphetamine from outside, maybe Colonel Holloway might have more directly some detail on that.
Colonel Holloway?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Through the chair to the representative there, if we could, I can't give you definite numbers, but I could tell you that we could work all our employees just on interdiction cases if we could do that, but we have to split up our workload and work the best cases and work some of each type of case. Certainly we don't want to have meth labs or marijuana grows in neighborhoods because they attract other crimes. On the other hand, interdiction of it certainly stops the greatest number or greatest amount of drugs coming into the state. So we have to balance those issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, one other resource question, and I think we'll be watching that as time goes, and be sensitive to your pleas. On slide four, and this will be my last question, Mr. Chairman, the DV assault arrests and the DUI arrests are up significantly, and some of that is, you know, our tougher laws. Some of it is your resource. What I'll be asking both you and the Department of Law, and you don't have to get it to me today, but the question arises in my mind, if you're making the arrest, is your time in court valuable in defending those arrests, or are they being overturned? And so I'm thinking about a resource base is what I'm thinking about.
Sure.
We don't have to have the answer now, Mr. Chairman.
And Commissioner, I was, you know, I'm a licensee, and I get a lot of pilots because we're located near the airport, so I get a lot of, you know, bar talk and bar conversation. And some of the commuter airlines out of Fairbanks that are hubs to rural Alaska, they are very frustrated that they are muling out a lot of drugs and alcohol and then responsible for medevacing back the people that are abusing those substances. Can you tell me what initiatives you anticipate the department taking up? But before, the problem that we've had, a lot of it was going out in mail, and I believe that we couldn't get subpoenas from marshals and postal inspectors, and and we had problems at the federal level. Can you tell me about any specific initiatives that are going to be launched under your time with the department?
Mr. Chairman, we have a couple of initiatives that are going now that are extremely valuable. One of those deals directly with the U.S. Postal Service, where we have now a number of troopers, and I don't have the exact number. Colonel Holloway might, if you want that number later on. We have a number of troopers that have been cross-deputized as U.S. Postal Inspectors, which allows them a greater authority within the U.S. mail system to interdict.
It's a huge problem, and I just will underline it. It's frustrating to the commuter, to the commuter travelers, because many, pilots are a lot of crotchety old guys that have been in the state for 30 and 40 years, and they're not the least bit interested in generating revenue by in that manner. And I would encourage you to continue to work on strategies to stop the problem before it gets out there. And I'm happy to bring that to your attention. Are there other questions for Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, I'd like to get back to Representative Grunberg's question earlier regarding some of the general problems that he wanted to hear a little bit about, and get some comment there. In general, I mean, you've heard a lot of the different statistics here, and you all are aware of some of the problems with the logistics and problems with investigations and having adequate resources to do investigations and have people placed where they need to be. And that continues to be an issue or a problem. The problem that I'm faced with is trying to determine what the true size and scope of that problem really is. And it's very difficult for me to do that when we're already operating under a condition where we have around 40 positions that could very directly impact the quality and level of our service. And those I've already outlined, 37 of those vacancies that we have dedicated towards getting filled, which I believe we'll have filled by the beginning of the fiscal year. Once we get those positions filled, I think I can have it'd be a lot easier for me to make a true assessment of what kind of services we're able to perform and what impacts we're actually having. We also have other initiatives that are going to be ongoing through this fiscal year that directly impact the ability for our troopers to do their jobs more efficiently and more effectively, particularly in the area of electronic communications, data sharing with other agencies to identify and apprehend criminals, as well as sharing of intelligence information to make our investigations much more robust or more effective. These are the type of things that will have an impact on our service capability. And one of the things we do need to look at in the near future, which has to be this year, is a good quality needs assessment as far as what we anticipate our future condition to be. What the crime picture is going to look like, what the economic picture and how that may impact crime is going to be, whether or not there's significant construction projects such as a natural gas pipeline coming to fruition that may cause direct impacts to public safety and our crime rates as well. That needs to be done pretty soon, and we're looking at that.
Commissioner, when did you begin your state service again?
My state service this most recent time was the end of September, early October.
So you've been on the job for 90 days, more or less?
A little more, yes.
Okay. Would it be worthwhile to have you come back to the committee sometime in March to give us another update, or do you feel that you're pretty comfortable with all the elements that we've gone over today? Do you feel like you're up to speed, notwithstanding DNA and some of the things that are, precise science?
Mr. Chairman, if the committee would like me to, I'm certainly willing to come testify again. But quite frankly, I think I've got a pretty good understanding of what the department needs. And a lot of the things that we're working on are longer-term issues.
Okay.
And we're not going to know by March or April where we truly stand. And it probably will be, hopefully I will be here testifying in front of you next year, but it probably will take then to be able to get a better picture of where we're at.
Yes, thank you. Representative Gatto, and then Dahlstrom, and then Holmes.
Yeah, Mr. Commissioner, we talked about VPSO positions and trooper positions and lab positions and who knows, court positions, jail positions, et cetera, but the governor's position is a hiring freeze. What happens? How does that conflict of a hiring freeze and filling new positions get resolved?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, currently all of our commission positions have been exempted from the freeze. So we're able, under today's decisions and rules out of the governor's office, to fill our trooper positions and our CSO positions and other positions that are critical to public safety.
Thank you. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner-elect Masters, thank you so much for taking the responsibility that you have and for serving our state again, coming out of retirement. I'm sure you were having some fun. But we appreciate having you here. Question about the VPSO. I know you served as a VPSO before you became a state trooper, correct? What is the percentage of VPSOs that actually do, is upgrade the right word, or move on and become troopers?
Through the chair, I don't have a percentage, and I don't know. It may be difficult to even get that percentage without a lot of hand research, but it is very small. I believe there are, counting myself, maybe two or three VPSOs that went into the trooper ranks. There are a number of others that went into municipal police agencies and some that went into some civilian state jobs, but civilian-type investigator positions.
Okay. And then on that same topic, on page 4, it says trooper support, village oversight visits, 2,340. And I'm wondering if there's been any kind of study done on the cost of travel of troopers to that incident site, the time it took to get there and everything, versus what the cost would be to have a trooper there 24/7.
I'm not aware of any studies that have been done to do a cost analysis or comparison in that regard. But I can say that under the current mechanisms, we're talking several visits a month, as opposed to having a trooper there in one of these villages full time. Would that constitute a very considerable difference in cost.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Holmes and then Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm thinking about some of the rural postings. I know Representative Dahlstrom and I've talked in the past that it can be kind of hard to pick up if you're not from a community and go out to some of these rural areas where maybe you're the only trooper on the ground. You're sort of coming in as the outsider. And I know historically, not only with the troopers, but also in the teaching and all sorts of professions, we've had some trouble in this state recruiting, maintaining, and also problems with turnover. How is that going at this point from the trooper standpoint? Are you having a hard time recruiting for some of these more remote posts? And what's the turnover rate on some of those?
Pardon me, we've been joined by the Speaker of the House. We'll turn and stand. Go ahead, Commissioner. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes. The trooper turnover rate for rural areas is relative. There's two different issues going on. The turnover rate in terms of employees resigning rather than going to a bush assignment or resigning out of a bush assignment is very low, very, very low. The turnover rate in the sense of troopers get out to rural areas and then want to transfer back into an urban area, that's allowed under certain circumstances, and they primarily have to, unless there's extreme conditions that cause hardship, they're required to be in those areas for about 3 to 4 years.
On that point, are you done?
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. On that point, what kind of attrition do we have amongst the trooper rank and file that are going over to the PDs? They're going to APD and to other law enforcement agencies. Are we experiencing turnover because of pay conditions and postings out to rural Alaska? And what's your position on that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have details in front of me that I could give you as far as numbers. We did at one time several years ago experience several employees leaving our department and going to the Anchorage Police Department. That number, I believe, has slowed over the last couple of years. I don't know if the recent pay increases at the Anchorage Police Department will have an effect or not. We're certainly doing things internally that will attempt to mitigate that. If I can get a number for you later at some point to provide regarding the numbers that actually went over to APD, if you wish.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The folks at the Anchorage Police Department tell me that their number one priority is upgrading and expanding the laboratory. Tell me the problem. Tell me what needs to be done.
What we've already identified a few minutes ago, the status of the lab and the condition for the future, as far as if we're going to continue DNA, we're going to have a new lab if we're going to change our and improve our ability to do DNA. The Anchorage Police Department, I believe, is very interested, and rightly so. Anchorage Police Department cases that are submitted to the lab are in excess of 60% of the lab's volume, and maybe even more than that. So they have certainly a very vested interest in the outcome of the lab's capability to provide services and what type of services they are able to provide. More direct to your question, the state does need a new lab. The scope and size of that lab, I think, has to be answered, and I believe the study that we have that has been commissioned to validate the design that's out there is going to answer some questions as far as whether or not the one that's been proposed is reasonable.
Commissioner, on that,
go ahead.
Thank you. On that point, when we were discussing the death penalty bill, the question arose whether the state is going to offer post-conviction DNA testing, and then the statistic of how many states are presently doing that is pretty overwhelming. Alaska, I think, is one of six states that does not. If the state were in its time horizon to embark on that, would that post-conviction DNA testing have to happen at the same lab? I mean, I can't imagine we would have two different DNA labs, because I imagine it takes a lot of science. Would that put an extra burden? If that happened in statute, would that put an extra burden on the existing crime lab? Is that where we would do that kind of processing, and how would you feel about that as policy?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the processing would be, in my opinion, at that lab, and as far as the burden, I probably should defer that question to Mr. Dim.
Okay, can we hear from you, Mr. Dim? A very concise answer, please.
Representative, through the chair, the analysis should happen at the crime laboratory. And in terms of burden, we anticipate that it probably right now wouldn't be more than 12 cases a year. So I don't see it as an extreme burden right now.
Okay. Thank you very much. And so policy-wise, just let me finish that point, please. So just on that point, Commissioner, from a policy point of view, if a bill advanced through the legislature asking for post-conviction DNA testing, is that something that the department would testify for or against, because of the pressure that you enumerate on the lab facilities?
Mr. Chairman, I think I would have to wait before I answer that question. I'd really need to look at it and analyze it and discuss ramifications and stuff before I'd be comfortable answering a yes, even a yes or no at this point.
With whom?
With my staff, with other state entities, Department of Law.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, to Mr. Dim, You said, quote, it would be an additional maybe 12 cases a year. Were you talking specifically about...
Representative Gruenberg, can I remind you, we're talking to the commissioner. We're focused on the commissioner. We're here to in advance of confirming the commissioner. Let's not go down a rabbit trail at 3 o'clock, please.
I just wanted to ask Mr. Dim one question resulting from what he said, if I may, please. You said it would result in about 12 cases a year. Were you referring by the use of the term it to refer to the post-conviction testing legislation? I just wasn't clear on your answer, sir.
Representative, through the chair, yes, we anticipate that requests to the laboratory for post-conviction DNA relief would come to about 12 submissions per year.
Thank you. Now back to the commissioner. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Do you foresee, DNA stuff aside, any other need for an upgraded or expanded crime lab, or is it solely related really to the DNA?
I'm through the chair. It's not solely related to DNA, although I think DNA is one of the most pointed examples of why the existing facility is not going to work for DNA in the future. The space that's allocated for testing now is inadequate for the number of personnel that are there. Literally, personnel are stepped in corners, and space is just not adequate. Space is not adequate for storage of evidence either. So there's a lot of different factors that bring us to that conclusion, but those are just a couple of them. DNA probably one of the most important.
Mr. Chair, not to take undue time at this hearing, but I'm wondering if the committee and yourself particularly would be interested in devoting part of another hearing to the issue of the need for an expanded or a new lab.
I think that's the purview of the Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner-elect, on page 3, when we were talking about sexual assaults and list the number of sexual assaults, and a comment that you made and I've heard from others was especially in the Bethel region. So can we talk about Bethel? What's going on in Bethel or what's not going on in Bethel?
Through the chair, Representative Dahlstrom, there's a lot of different factors, I'm sure, that are contributing to higher rates of sexual assault and sexual abuse of minors in that region. And I'm certainly not going to sit here and profess that I know the answers. I do know that there is a lot higher volume being reported in that area. Whether that volume that's being reported is higher than in other areas comparatively, that I don't know. Whether the actual rate of violence in that area is higher than other areas, I don't have that answer either. But certainly, we do need resources in that area. And that's, as a matter of fact, one of the specific reasons we targeted freeing up those two troopers to put CSOs in that region to get more resources available for response.
Okay, and then is Bethel a wet or a damp area?
I believe Bethel is damp. I'd have to check to verify that, but certainly there's a number of villages around Bethel that are dry.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any final questions for Commissioner Designee Masters? Commissioner, I'd like to applaud you on the efforts of the department on online sexual predators. We had that agent that was here last year, and some of it is made the news, and we really applaud you for your innovations in those areas. It's like a whole new horizon for crime for ambitious predators. I appreciate the many data points here in your presentation and your ability to be concise with so much information. And would you just, with broad brushstrokes, tell us what your three highest priorities are going to be as you begin your tenure with the Department of Public Safety under this administration?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The very broad brush, the first one, continual improvement in services. And that means filling our vacancies, identifying what we can do, putting resources where they're most needed, taking advantage of our information technologies to do our jobs better, identifying and requesting and getting adequate facilities and equipment for our personnel to do their jobs. And the third is to continually work with other agencies and foster relationships to be more effective.
Sounds like a customer service organization, and I applaud you for rehandling the DPS to be more user-friendly. So thank you. Any final questions for Commissioner Designee? Thank you for re-engaging in state service. We're fortunate to have somebody with your experience and tenure and temperament to join the state, and I thank you. Any final thoughts, remarks, questions?
Welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Designee. Thanks for bringing your folks with you, and we look forward to hearing from Lieutenant Dial. We like him. Thank you. It's 5 minutes after 3, and we're adjourned.
Thank you.